You are listening to a Place to Be Nation Pop Blast for Dark Knight's Metal, issue number 2.
You can't kill the metal. Metal will live on. Punk rock tried to kill the metal, but they failed as they were smite to the ground. New Wave tried to kill the metal, but they failed as they were stricken down to the ground. Grunge tried to kill the metal. They failed as they were thrown to the ground.
Place to Be Nation Pop, welcome to another Pod Blast Metal Style. That's right, it's another shot looking at the DC Comics event, Dark Knight's Metal. I am, of course, Russell Sellers of the Sellers Points Podcast, and joining me, as always, to talk about DC Metal is my own resident metal and DC historian, Todd Weber. What's up, Todd?
What's up, Russell? I'm ready to talk about a batshit crazy-ass comic book. This is a crazy, crazy comic, my friend.
Good Lord, it was. You thought issue one was nuts. Issue two drops in like some real like story meat, I guess is how I would describe it, and I don't know what to make of it. I'm just tasting like all these familiar things like I've had before, but now it's like all these great tastes that, you know, tasted great on their own now shall taste great together.
Oh, absolutely. This is like Grant Morrison said, I'm gonna write a crazy DC comic book story, and Scott Snyder said, hold my baby Darkseid.
And baby Darkseid throws the best metal horns.
Yeah, absolutely. That I was not prepared for baby Darkseid, even though I knew he was there from Justice League, the Apocalypse War. What did they call that storyline? The Jeff Johns last story.
The Darkseid War.
Darkseid War. There we go.
Yes. Yeah.
That was awesome.
It was. That was a fantastic story, and I love that Scott Snyder is playing with some of the leftover story threads from that, as well as going back to the proverbial beginning of the DC universe, or the DC multiverse, even with the opening pages of Dark Knight's Metal number 2.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was quite the callback to the Krona and the Anti-Monitor hand reaching through the black hole, or into the I guess we're going into the dark multiverse here, and that was definitely a callback to Crisis, which had pages and pages of that, the original Crisis on Infinite Earth. So that's the nostalgia that was working in me at the very beginning of this story.
Those notes were hitting, especially whenever we get to a little bit later in the story with all the immortals standing around talking about all these different elements that could come together to maybe defend this multiverse, or the multiverse that we all know, against the dark multiverse. Because apparently even the villains who are aware of all of this know that this is bigger than any of their petty differences with the superheroes. They're like, this is something that's way too big and needs to be stopped. So it's kind of tripping me out to see Vandal Savage and Ra's al Ghul referring to himself as the youngest member of the group.
Yeah, I caught that too. Yeah, we'll get back to that panel of immortals, because that was a special moment. But just the opening of this was threw you right into the crazy with the everybody's chasing Batman, right?
Yep. Just all sorts of crazy stuff going on there, because as we know from the end of issue one, Batman had stolen a sample of nth metal so that he could get a much closer look at it. But it was also revealed that Batman himself is the conduit through which the dark multiverse invaders will pass into our world. And of course, Bruce being Bruce has taken it upon himself to protect the entire multiverse, thinking that this is a job for Batman. And I think he finds out very quickly that Bat God doesn't have all the answers.
Yeah, no. What I liked is that this issue had a lot more exposition about that, about why he is special and unique, about as far as a conduit. And it takes you through the steps as where the other types of metal he's exposed to make him this special portal, the human portal for the Bat God, or for Barbatos.
Yes, that they did a really good job with the exposition, and that's one of those things that with these with all of these events, be it DC, Marvel, whoever, sometimes the exposition can be a little like heavy-handed because you're trying to catch up people who maybe just jumped onto this event. But I thought it was all handled extremely well, especially since they do it largely in the context of an action scene.
Yeah, and that's the way I like it. I don't want just pages and pages of text. I want somebody coming out and saying, it was me all along, Batman, or something like that. I prefer that to happen instead of just reading it. This is a little bit more organic. But what I liked is that you had a whole bunch of Batman decoys running around, and nobody knew which one actually was Batman, which was pretty cool.
That was really, really great that Snyder called. And Snyder did something in this scene that definitely popped me big, and it was a callback all the way to his Batman number one, when Dick Grayson poses as the Joker in Arkham Asylum using a special type of mask that renders a 3D, almost like hard light construct around his face. And Dick was using that same mask to mimic Bruce, or to mimic Batman, so that he could, I guess, be more convincing to the rest of the group.
Yeah. Another thing I loved is that it was mostly the team from Detective Comics that Bruce employed here. So,
yeah, that bit that we've all seen the image online, I think, of Superman punching Batman through the chest, and it looks like Superman just straight up murders Batman. When you get the full context, when you see the very next panel of that, and as we always do, we spoil the issue, folks. We're going page by page.
Oh, sorry. Spoilers.
I think most people kind of know that whenever they come to these pod blasts. But when it's revealed that that was Clayface, that was awesome.
I was like, yeah, it was very rewarding, especially Tinian's doing such great. Tinian is doing such great work in Detective Comics. And to have a payoff like that with his team, I also appreciated Batman's always a couple steps ahead of everybody, and the sabotage he did with getting the Swamp Thing trapped, having them fall into the Swamp Thing trap. I marked out for that too.
Oh my God, that was a big pop! Like, and when Dick Grayson delivers that coup de grace, I was like, yes, this is awesome. This is everything that you wanted it to be and more. I don't know if we'll see Swamp Thing anymore, but this was a good use of him.
Yeah, but I mean, we had Dream last issue, we had a brief glimpse of Zatanna and Constantine, and then you had Swamp Thing here. So, I mean, he's using all the corners of the DCU and the Vertigo universe, it appears.
Yeah, it's like all the toys are now in Scott Snyder's sandbox, and he's using them to incredible effect. And I don't know about you, but I kind of marked out a little bit for the, I guess it's the new Legion of Doom headquarters. At least that's what it looked like to me.
That was definitely the intended to be the classic Challenge of the Super Friends Legion of Doom headquarters. And Kendra is not coming out of it. She's coming into it. But who are in there but the immortal, all the undying ones in the DCU, but unfortunately they're mostly villains except for, say, Phantom Stranger, and I see this time we have Uncle Sam too.
Yes, we have Uncle Sam
in there,
and the Wizard Shazam is also sitting at the table, and
Morgane Le Fay from the Demon, and King Arthur times. You also have Cain and Abel, it appears. You do have Abel. I don't know if that's Cain to the right of Ra's al Ghul, but
I would assume probably so.
Okay.
I was glad that you were here to break all that down, because I was like, I don't know who some of these characters are. As much DC knowledge as I have, I'm like, my God, they are reaching into the pantheon for this.
Yeah, I don't know who the Hooded Justice guy is. It's probably not Hooded Justice himself. I don't believe it is him, but Sally, no, what are you doing? I don't know who that character is. I'll have to research that. But definitely a nice callback to more Vertigo elements. I mean, Cain and Abel are from the House of Secrets and the House of Mystery, and they play in Dreams Realm, so pretty cool. And I always mark out for those guys when they show up.
Yeah, Snyder is definitely continuing to pull in more of that Neil Gaiman side of the DC Universe into this story. I'm glad that wasn't just kind of a one-off tease, like we see Dream very quickly and then we'll move on. No, it does appear that Dream is going to be playing much more of a role, and maybe even more of the gaming universe is going to be playing more of a role in this as it goes forward. But what did you think about the plan laid out by the Immortals to use, and, you know, forgive us for getting into the weeds a little bit here, but the astral projection version of the Anti-Monitor brain to be fired through, I guess, through baby Darkseid into the dark multiverse or into the void as a way of stopping, or as I guess a way of destroying the dark multiverse.
Yeah, at the Rock of Eternity. So Shazam's giving his approval to that. Or I'm sorry, the Wizard.
Yeah, it was a Wizard. Shazam is on board with this idea. Although it was interesting to hear that that Ra's al Ghul was kind of not.
He's the only one who on this panel that thinks that Batman is greater or smarter than all of them, or at least has he's prepared for everything that Batman could be doing, just because he's Ra's and he knows the detective, as he calls him. He never calls him by his name, Bruce or Batman. He's always the detective. So
I absolutely love that too, because Scott Snyder writes Ra's al Ghul like he's writing an episode of Batman the Animated Series. And I absolutely adore the way that Scott Snyder uses this character. But I like how he's got Kendra here, you know, talking to these folks, trying to understand what their plan is, and then she's laying out what hers is, and of course they are very different from one another.
Yeah, I think the link is they're all the ones who have access to Carter's journal. If that's
that would make the most sense, because this is all a game of immortals, and you can even see in the background of the panel where Vandal Savage is, I guess, just kind of laying out what the ultimate option is. You can see the Wolf Clan, Bear Clan, and Bird Clan emblems above his head. So I'm assuming that these are all representatives from each of those clans, actually.
Yeah, I just like when a writer takes things that were already there but creates a greater story that it integrates all these things. So now that there's a reason why there are so many immortal people, or they tie back to a certain thing, a common thing. And I appreciate that. It's Geoff Johns does that sometimes too. He did it certainly with the Green Lantern mythos. So Batman is raiding the tomb of Prince Khufu. That is Carter Hall's ancestor, or himself really, right?
It's his old body. It's his original body. Because he was Prince Khufu of Egypt before all of the before his first encounter with Nth Metal rendered he and his beloved who is Kendra in this book, but Shaira Hall,
right,
as now immortal beings. So they can die over and over again, but they will always be reincarnated to find each other, and it's all linked through Nth Metal. And what did you think about this scene about having Dream following Batman around?
Yeah, I mean, it seems that I don't know why they're teamed up. I mean, they Dream showed up at the end of last time, and he explained some things to Batman. But now he's kind of just making sure that Batman knows the stakes of everything that's going on.
Yeah, Dream seems very limited in what he can do here, because he even says that he can't speak to Batman's plan, that he's done what he could for him in this realm, and if the Nightmare Army succeeds, if the world does go dark, to call him in the place of the Black Sun.
That's pretty much foreshadowing.
that is definitely... I think that's basically telling us that Batman is about to be flung into the dark multiverse himself, because I'm assuming that what Dream is referring to there is the Black Sun of the Dark Multiverse.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's more mythology to that, or there's a specific, I don't know, it would be an Easter egg, but knowing Snyder, there will be things that link back to older stories when we explore that Dark Multiverse coming up. So he is ambushed, Batman is ambushed as Dream leaves by Clark and Diana. So we have the Trinity reunited, and looks like that they're trying to stop him at all costs.
Yeah, they're clearly worried that what he's about to do is going to, you know, make things worse. And, you know, little did they know they were probably right. But then Batman produces from his bag Baby Darkseid.
Throwing horns.
Yes, throwing devil horns immediately.
From the get-go, he's got his horns on. Yeah, that was pretty great. And then we get a cool callback to a stupid story where Darkseid sent Batman back to the end of time or beginning of time and had his work his way back through to the present day.
Speaking of Grant Morrison.
That was, yeah. Hey, so this is raising it up just a little bit.
It does bring Final Crisis back into continuity, like, pretty firmly with that statement. I mean, without going into any greater detail other than Bruce got, you know, hit by the Omega Sanction and sent back through time. And now Bruce wants to do it again and send himself all the way back to where Barbatos first saw him, like, or first, like, gained a knowledge of what was to come. And maybe he could stop it from the very beginning. But according to Diana, this would mean that Bruce is essentially going to erase himself from history.
So is Bruce trying to go back in time here and just stop Barbatos from being created, or hit him with pure nth metal or something? Is that
it's a very ambiguous plan. He doesn't go into a whole lot of detail here. He just seems to think that if he goes back to the moment that Barbatos saw him at this one point, and if he figures if he just removes himself from the equation, that he saves everybody. And of course, this is Batman trying to sacrifice himself.
Yeah, martyr.
Yeah, Batman does have a martyr complex, and this is him playing into that very heavily. And of course, it's revealed that this is not actually the tomb of Prince Khufu. As Kendra finally has tapped into the communication system that Bruce is using and is trying to warn him that he doesn't need to go there, that he's been tricked and led into the tomb of Hathset.
Yeah. What would Vince Russo say about that?
Bro, it never happened.
Swerve! So who's been setting Bruce up must be Barbatos himself, or, you know, the priests of Barbatos, it looks like, right?
Priests.
Is that who these guys are?
They are definitely Barbatos worshippers. They worship the mantle of the bat. But working alongside them, another little not so much a swerve, but just a good callback, the Court of Owls makes themselves known as the ones who have actually been pulling the strings from the get-go.
So, yeah, and I love that because it makes, I mean, just thinking from Snyder's perspective, was this all part of the plan or a story he wanted to tell someday, or did he just revisit characters that were a primary villain during his run? Or, you know, did he have this in mind? And I who knows if he did or not, because it works perfectly either way. I mean, it's awesome to see this was our plan all along, or, you know, I just love what he's done with these tribes and the Bird Clan, the Bat Clan, and making earlier events in the continuity a lot more significant.
It really does. If now it really makes me want to go back and start looking at all the little pieces that Snyder planted throughout his 50 some odd issue run on Batman that could easily have set this up from the beginning. And that Snyder is such a master storyteller, he certainly knows how to make sure that even if he's not being totally truthful about setting this story up, since Batman number one, it's at least presented in a way that, you know, you could conceivably say that it was. And it's a pretty good plan that they have here to trap Batman by, you know, setting off an ancient trap that has a whole bunch of little poison needles hit him to immobilize him. And they apparently they activate some sort of a magical trap to deal with Superman and Wonder Woman, because they are very quickly immobilized as well. And that kind of leads to a fairly, like, shocking scene right after this, because Batman has now been imbued with the final metal through these,
right,
through these poison needles. And I did kind of laugh at the name they gave this metal.
I rolled my eyes myself. I'm just like, okay, all right, I guess you get to name it, but what else can you call it? We had this unnamed metal. It's weird because leading up to this with the previous three issues, we thought, oh, it's all about the nth metal. But it's in this issue, we got a lot more. Well, it was the other metals he was exposed to earlier in the Court of Owls and the Joker to the Death story, you know, that Snyder and Capullo did. But now we have the fifth metal, and it's Batmanium. Not Batmantium, but Batmanium. Yeah. So I'm not nuts about it, but we'll let it slide. I think that's a writer's prerogative.
It's a good thing that everything else around it is so good, because that's pretty rough. Now they pour this stuff onto him, and as it's like consuming around him, like you see Batman kind of turn into this, I don't know, like a Stargate, I guess is how I could best describe it. But he also appears to melt away from existence. And as the this new doorway opens, the first thing that jumps through are three demonic Robins.
Caw, caw.
Crow. They keep saying crow over and over and over again as they now murder the three members of the Court of Owls by, like, basically cannibalizing them. They're almost like zombie-like in their attack. Zombies, vampiric. It's a pretty brutal scene. One of them even has, like, intestines in his mouth at one point. But that's
good, though. They all got chains around their neck as though they are pets of something, or, you know, minions. I know a story came out as to why did they say crow? Why did they say crow? And I'm sure that's some kind of tie into Robin, but
the
great scene.
The reasoning behind, and I think it's a pretty safe bet. They keep saying crow, and the only thing these Robins will say is crow, but the one holding their chains to get them to heal says the word bar. Put those two together, crowbar.
Crowbar, yes.
As in what Joker beats Jason Todd mercilessly with.
Yep.
Before blowing him up. But they heal at that word.
And I voted for that, so blame me. I was one of the deciding. I killed Jason Todd.
You bastard.
Yeah. And then we get the reveal. Yeah, he did. He sure did. He got Superboy punched into continuity. So thanks, Superboy of Earth Prime. So then we get the ultimate reveal of the Dark Multiverse Justice League, but they're all variations on Batman, or they're fusions of Batman with other characters, right?
Yep. They're all Bruce Wayne. And sort of takes on the Batman of their various worlds.
And is that Barbatos behind them, or is that?
I'm assuming so.
Okay.
I'm assuming that Barbatos is the giant thing behind them.
Yeah.
They all say the same thing. The lead up was in this obviously very booming print. You want Bruce Wayne? Look around, and then all of them say the same thing. I'm right here, with the exception of, he does say it. I just missed the bubble, but the Batman who laughs, the one who's holding the chains of the Robins. But we see all of the dark Batman of the dark multiverse. So you've got, I guess it's the Destroyer, who looks very much like Doomsday.
Yeah. And so there's your Superman.
Yeah.
Kind of, I guess. I mean, I know these are based on aspects of the JLA's personalities, but they're also fused with Batman, and you have some gender swapping going on too.
Yeah. The Aqua Woman, I guess, of the dark multiverse, still wearing a bat motif, but also carrying the trident, very, almost kind of steampunkish in a way.
Yeah.
And
a little bit of tech to her too.
And of course we've seen, the Red Death a few times now. He was one of the first to be revealed. We get a good look at the Batman cyborg infusion. Of course the Dawnbreaker, the Green Lantern, take, who also looks a little bit more, robotic or robot-like in this, than I remember seeing him. But one of my favorite part of this panel is actually a very small thing that if you're not looking for it, you'll miss it. Baby Darkseid is off to the right here.
Yep.
Still throwing up devil horns.
Yeah. Like he's like, this is badass. Like he's at a rock show. Yeah. I caught that too. The only thing the Barbatos armor kind of looks like Anti-Monitor to me, kind of. So I don't know if that's a thing or if that's just it almost has a tech organic kind of thing going on to it. But just great character designs by Capullo here. I do, you know, the Batman Who Laughs, I can't wait for that. That Joker pastiche is going to be awesome. Like, what if Batman was a Joker and vice versa in this evil, twisted world? It's going to be cool. Cool stories. And these are all coming up pretty soon, I believe. Yeah, these one shots.
Yeah, we've got not long from now, all the tie-ins are going to start. And actually this week, the first of the tie-ins did kick off with the new issue of Teen Titans.
Yep.
That was the first of the tie-ins to get going. And then the next tie-in will be Batman the Red Death, who is the Flash infusion. That comes out on September 20th, along with a tie-in of Nightwing number 29, which will, I believe, also ties in with what Teen Titans started at number 12. I think that's the Gotham Resistance. So all of that's coming up pretty soon, like within the next week. And, man, this doesn't look good for Bruce and Diana. Excuse me, for Clark and Diana here at the end. It kind of looks like their life force is being drained away. And, man, I don't know how they get out of this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what kind of Deus Ex Machina we're going to get here. But it's going to be a fun ride, a fun story. But, yeah, we can assume that they're not going to be killed. I do like that we get the Journal of Carter Hall wrapping things up here as the bookends of the story. And then they also go more into that crisis story with Corona. And they say, that he was reviled for his hubris for going too far, and he was hated. That great hand might as well pointed its finger at him. And then it talks about the origin story of the multiverse as a cautionary tale. It says, if you explore too far, you may just become the villain of your own story, which is obviously talking about Batman here.
Yep.
Is now the villain, and so I loved how
Snyder did that too. Like, he makes Krona and Batman parallel stories.
Mm-hmm. Like just the quest for knowledge, ultimately corrupting.
Now, of course, this issue was much darker than issue one. We still get some really cool, like crazy, fun stuff at the beginning. The big chase scene through the swamp, being what I'm referring to. Not exactly, you know, mech suits on a new war world or anything. We're not doing a Power Rangers impression this time. But still, this one definitely, I felt, got more into the meat of what metal is really going to be like. What do you think of the tonal shift in this one?
Well, the stakes were raised, and I'm just glad they got their explanations in a little bit as to why this is happening, because it was happening awfully fast in the preludes and the first issue. Like, where's this coming from? What's going on? And this this issue kind of like tied things up enough that you understood a lot more of the story. I like where it's going, but it definitely darkened the tone, and you see what's happening with the invasion of the Dark Multiverse characters. So going to be cool. And, you know, let's see if Batman himself is somewhere else. You know, he is this Batman who's been changed, or is this their Batman and he's traded places? You know, is he in the mirror universe?
I'm going to guess probably in the mirror, you know, in the Dark Multiverse somewhere, because there is a book coming called Batman Lost, and the premise is that Batman is literally lost in the Dark Multiverse. And as we get deeper into the event, we're going to see some of these tie-ins tell the origin stories of each of these different twisted versions of Batman. And now that we know a little bit more about the Batman Who Laughs, I'm very intrigued by that. As it's definitely Bruce Wayne who has been made into the new version of the Joker by the old Joker whom he killed. And
yeah,
that Joker apparently planted a trap within himself that if Batman kills him, sets it off, it will release a type of Joker toxin that will turn Bruce Wayne into the new Joker. So that's the result of it. And I can't wait to see what, I believe it's James Tynion IV is writing that. I can't wait to see what he does with this.
Yeah. I subscribed to Dark Knights in Comixology, and I've been buying here and there more digital books, but I thought I was only getting the core book, the Snyder Capullo book, but apparently my subscription gets all the tie-ins that are one shots and things like that. So not the like Teen Titans and the Nightwing books I don't necessarily read, but I'm on board. I didn't think I was going to be, but this is a great story, and there's going to be a lot of cool stuff coming up. I can't wait to see where it goes.
I'm right there with you. I am definitely getting all the tie-in stuff, including the other books that are tying into it, because most of those are already on my pull list. I'll see how they turn out. And I think in our next time when we come back in a month to talk about Metal number 3, I'll throw in a little talk about some of the tie-ins, and you know, we can talk about some of the ones that you've read, maybe a couple of the ones that you weren't able to get to, and we can assess basically whether or not they're worth picking up, or if you should just stick to the main event. And I anticipate at least a couple of them probably not being worth your dollar, but I think a few of these at least are probably going to be damn good standalone issues, specifically the Batman Who Laughs and the Dawnbreaker. I think those two are absolute must-buys, and then we'll just tell you what we think of the others.
Yeah, and it's good to see our friends Liam and all kinds of other guys getting work on these books, so a lot of eyes will be on them. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Very happy to see that Liam Sharp is involved in Metal, and you know, I don't think we praised him enough on this issue, but man, Greg Capullo knocked it out of the park again.
Yeah, outstanding. My one thing I didn't like about his previous run was the Endgame arc. I thought that was not the best Capullo art. It was very simplified and rushed, I felt. Here is a lot more fleshed out, better backgrounds, better character work. And so you get to see how he would do, how he does handling a team book or team story. It's just so good. This is true synergy between the writer and the artist, because the dark evil stuff he's bringing up is really cool.
I got to tell you, some of my favorite panels in the book were actually at the beginning when he's drawing Flash. Yeah. I really like how Greg Capullo draws the Flash. And if I don't know who he'd work with on that book, but if, hell, give Scott Snyder the Flash. If it's a Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo Flash, I'm reading it.
Jeez. Yeah, Flash kind of popped off the pages. It was pretty cool. I say that too much. It was outstanding. The art of Capullo was on Flash was outstanding, and it brought the Flash to vivid life.
It absolutely did. And I mean, their inker and colorist as well, Jonathan Glapion, FCO, like all this team, like this is the Batman team that we all loved from the New 52. absolutely killing it so far on this event. And man, I just wish we could get the issue sooner.
Yeah, I know. We got so many great things coming out right now, and we have Doomsday Clock happening in about 6 weeks, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
coming up. We're going to have quick overlap.
We just got to look at issue 2's cover, and that Ozymandias hand on Lex Luthor's shoulder.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
That popped me a good
bit. It looks like we have real Lex Luthor back, too. So.
Yeah, very classic-looking Lex, but Gary Frank always does that. But, yeah, we'll get overlapping events, and maybe we'll have time to pod blast about that one, too. But, man, Metal is rocking and rolling. This is an event that is worth following month to month. So, if nothing else, guys, get on the monthly main event and get ready to just have your hair blown back, because this one is turned all the way up to 11, and it's only 2 issues in.
So. No one can destroy the Metal. All right. So,
yes.
Thanks, Russell. This was fun. We will see you guys in Place to Be Nation Land next time.
Absolutely. We will be back for another pod blast when Metal number 3 drops. And with that, enjoy a little more Tenacious D.